Oscars.
Welcome to No Prize from God, episode 16. No Prize from God features conversations with creative people about belief, unbelief, and everything between. I'm your host, Ryan J. Downey, and my guest this episode is Kellen Quinn, frontman for Sleeping with Sirens. I got to know Kellen through writing in-depth cover stories on his band, first in 2012 and then again the following year and most recently in 2015. There's been a series of catch-up calls, video interviews, show hangs, and whatever else over the years. His band has released albums with Rise Records, Epitaph, and most recently Warner Music. The band's urgent anthems and earnest ballads are anchored around Quinn's intimate vocal revelations. They've debuted as high as number 3 on the Billboard charts and graced the cover of every alternative rock magazine you can name in America, the United Kingdom, and Australia several times over. Kellen's voice is heard alongside Vic Fuentes on Pierce the Veil's gold-selling single, King for a Day, and they've sold close to a million albums around the world. Kellen is also a husband and father who lives a relatively quiet existence when he's not on tour in the studio or doing Sleeping with Sirens-related press. He was just a kid when he first rose to prominence on YouTube with an acoustic song called Jesus in the Southern Sky before Sleeping with Sirens, as they would become known, had really taken shape. We'd never really discussed the spiritual end of life before, so I was happy to have him on. So here it is, my conversation with Kellen Quinn of Sleeping with Sirens. This is No Prize from God. So yeah, so tell me a little bit about growing up. I know a bit about obviously your childhood from having, you know, being friends for a long time and having written about you quite a bit, and you know, getting into music and all that sort of thing. But in terms of any kind of faith background and life and death and what does it all mean and that sort of stuff, what was your early introduction to some of those ideas and what do you remember, you know, as a child, forming? Your thoughts, kind of wrapping your head around that stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. Like on my mom's side, well, my mom in general didn't really go to church. She did when she was younger, and then she kind of stopped going, and had like her own kind of beliefs on the situation. Like my dad's side was pretty religious, though. Like my I remember going to like youth group with my aunt when I was like younger. Just because my dad was kind of the sole like guardian of me and my sister. My mom kind of moved away when we were younger. So my dad, I think, to kind of get some space between me and my sister, would send us to youth group with my aunt. And so that's kind of my early childhood, is going to youth group on Wednesdays and being plugged into that sort of like, children's church kind of medium, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was fun, you know, like when I went to like children's church, we had to build like these, I remember building like these, wooden like race cars. You design them, and then like there's a dude that would like shape it out of wood based off your drawing, and then you could paint it a certain color, and then you do like these, they were called like derby races, where you would like go and race your car. And I actually made it to like the finals. decided to like travel with my car to like go to this like final like derby race.
That's
so
killer.
Like to me, yeah. So to me, it was like children's church growing up. Like you would remember like Bible verses and you'd get like rewards and stuff. And it was like, it was more about going and hanging out, socializing with your friends. So yeah, that was like, that was mainly it. And actually my aunt would take us to McDonald's. It was like tradition afterwards. And we would get like those, twist cones, like the vanilla chocolate cones. So that was also incentive to go.
Yeah.
Get those afterwards.
So really like a social and familial and kind of cultural. Yeah. I mean, like a lot of us, you know, experience with that sort of intertwining with the religious experience. Was that, was that like a non-denominational kind of evangelical thing, or was there a certain, was there any kind of certain spin to the type of church it was?
No, just a typical Christian church, non-denominational.
And what do you remember as a kid kind of, you know, I mean, it's, I it's fascinating to me, you know, we're both parents, obviously, and, you know, having kids of different ages and everything, you know, introducing some of these ideas to children, you know, we're so used to it because it's such a typical thing and, you know, across many cultures and across human history to be introduced to this stuff at an early age. But now as an adult, I'm like, man, it's so crazy. The idea of, talking about this stuff with kids, you know, let alone something like the Christian story, even where it's like, there's human sacrifice and, you know, blood and all these like crazy concepts. And then even on the other side of the coin, you know, everything from grace to forgiveness and whatever. And it's like, there's such big ideas to kind of hoist upon small minds that are, you know, really just getting a grip on things.
The only thing I really remember is going to my grandmother's church when they were doing like a live action play of Jesus being like hung on the cross and stuff. And I remember like being terrified of whoever played Satan because he came out with like one of these like fake whips and he's like whipping it on the ground and he had like red face paint on.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember being like terrified and then meeting him afterwards. Like he's like, hey, I'm just a guy, you know, like, and it was kind of fine after that. But I still remember like, that's one of my earliest memories of being kind of freaked out about it, you know, but,
yeah,
but going to like church on Wednesdays was like, to me, like, I don't think it was that as serious. Like it was, we would talk about like Noah and the boat and like, we would talk about like some of the more fun stories. It wasn't necessarily like super deep, you know, it was more about like, again, if you remembered a Bible verse, you got a prize and you get to play with your friends and like you sing some songs, but it's mostly about like just hanging out and socializing. So
yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's like Jonah and the whale is a lot more fun than the Passion of the Christ.
Yeah. Jonah. Exactly. Jonah and the whale. And it wasn't ever like, no, this really happened. Like this dude actually got eaten by a whale. To me, it was just like fun little stories that they told, you know, I never look back on it and go, I wonder if that dude really got eaten by a whale. Like to me, it's almost like a folklore, like almost like a wives' tale, you know?
Yeah. And when you think about kind of our grand myth making and storytelling and how it developed in human civilization, it's like, you know, now we have myths. Like we all, if you talk about Yoda or the Force or a lightsaber, like most people in the West know what that stuff means. And we understand kind of the ideas and the concepts that are in those stories without thinking like, yeah, Luke Skywalker was like this real person that did all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think, you know, every once in a while, like my family will make me go to like Easter Sunday service. And it's just like, now it's a whole different experience being an adult, just like looking at these people at church that get so into it. And like all the stuff that comes along with church, it's almost like really kind of embarrassing for me to like to be there and to kind of witness it, because it just seems so silly, you know? Like you see like 15-year-old girls like with their hands up, like with tears in their eyes, like praising the Lord and like singing with such conviction. And to me, I'm like, dude, you're 15. Like you have nothing to like cry or like be upset about. Like what kind of crazy sin could you be doing that you would need to like worship super heavy, you know? And I mean, that's just something I noticed like now, and also just, how intense some of these pastors get into like the stories, and even like my 12-year-old like went with me to Easter Sunday service, and afterwards he's just like, I'm just not meant to go to church. Like, hey dude, that's totally fine. Like,
yeah,
you don't have to if you don't want to, you know? Like, I'd never force that upon my kids. So,
well, kind of getting back to your childhood, I guess, and so when you hit the teenage years, you know, which is, as you referenced, such a time of passion and intensity in so many different directions. And for some of us, we put that into creating music or being really into music or different types of art. And, you know, for some people that's church, for some people that's activism, you know, it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. For some people it's doing a bunch of drugs or vandalizing or, you know, setting things on fire, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Where was that kind of channeling for you, obviously, as you're getting into music and going to shows and stuff like that?
It's funny. I, you know, I went to youth group a lot when I was in high school, and I went there because there was, the guy that set up the youth group, also built like a skate park, and it was like the only indoor like skate park. So me and my friends would go and listen to like 20 minutes of a sermon just so we could skate. And, yeah, and it was cool. Like, he played POD and stuff like that. And so I got into some of that kind of music, you know, through going to youth group. Like, I was going to buy like a Godsmack CD, and my youth pastor was like, why don't you check out POD? Because it's kind of in the same vein, and it's a little bit like better lyrically and stuff like that. So I bought like the POD CD, and I got into that band, and, you know, still to this day, I like some POD songs, you know?
yeah, totally.
So, I mean, but it was cool because we went on like a youth mission trip to LA and like helped paint some inner city people's houses and like helped this like elderly lady move out of her house. And we were staying like at a church there and got to like be a part of the community, which is something that I thought was cool about being in youth group.
Yeah.
Because it was about doing good deeds and good services, and I thought that was like the one thing that I took from Christianity, like doing like good deeds for people and just being a part of that. And it was something that I think helped me become like a giving person in that way, because I would, you know, like we did like the soup kitchens and stuff for the homeless and things like that, and it taught me to like be very humble when it came to like money and to be appreciative of all the things that I had and stuff like that. So that taught me like good stuff. But yeah, every time I would go to like into adult church with my parents, I just thought it was silly because it was always like, it always felt like the same spiel. Like, if you're going through hard times, like you just need to accept the Lord into your heart. And then there'd be like this whole, like at the end of church, like they would ask who needs like God in their heart, and people would put their hands up and then they would baptize them. And I always thought like, okay, well, what about everyone else that's already baptized or already like saved? Like, where's the message for us? Like, where is the help? Like, when, you know, when my dad's like struggling financially, like where's the help in that? When you see your pastor driving like a Mercedes around and they're constantly asking for tithes and offerings, and the church has like LED walls and freaking the worship team has like all the finest gear and all this stuff. It's like, it didn't make sense to me, because I was coming from youth group where we were helping out homeless people and poor people and putting our time and energy into that. And I didn't see the adult church doing the same thing. So I thought that was always kind of strange.
Yeah, no, that's super profound. And I think that that's parallel to a lot of people's experience and where a lot of disillusionment starts to really come in when, as you pointed out, the emphasis is so much on conversion, and it's like, you know, preaching and getting people on board. And then there's a lot of like, okay, now I'm in the club. Like, what's this club all about? What do we do? You know? And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're in the club, but what's the club? 'Cause the club just seems to be trying to gain more members into the club and not necessarily about like all the cool things that we were doing when we were younger. Like, where did all that go? You know? And it almost seemed like your parents and the adults were going to church just so they could feel better about facing the week, you know? Mm-hmm. So I always thought that was kind of strange, and that's kind of where I started to lose touch. But I mean, I did gain a lot of friendships through like going to like concerts and stuff and seeing bands like Showbread and seeing bands that were from like the Tooth and Nail era, like Amberlynn and bands like that, that were a part of like a Christian label, but not necessarily like the Christian artists that were being played on the Christian radio stations.
Yeah.
And again, dude, it was, to me, it was all about community. It was all about finding friends and stuff, people that were like-minded. And, you know, I was lucky enough to grow up and not be, I mean, I did experiment with a couple things. Like I did go to my friend's house and drink one time, or, you know, like I smoked weed a couple times like that, but I wasn't doing shitty things. Like I think that being a part of the church and having some of those, I guess influences there, like helped me to kind of stay out of that, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, it can definitely provide a nice place of structure, especially when, if you don't feel that you have that structure in your family situation, you know, I think it definitely can be a positive force for change. And as you said, when done right, with the emphasis on good works and charity and stuff like that, that can really instill great values that go forward. But yeah, and then there's always that paradox, particularly with evangelicals and a lot of us who have had that, a little bit of that church experience, where you go, man, this guy's like a worship leader, which basically means he does a rock show all day on Sunday and he's making like six figures, you know, and you're like, why is it, how do I reconcile this with Jesus, the dude who was, you know, homeless, wandering around?
Yeah, there's this band called Seven Places that was signed to a Christian label, and that was the dude that was leading worship every Sunday at church. So it's like a lot of people, you know, my age or younger, were like, this is sick, we get to go basically see a Seven Places concert every single night, you know.
Yeah.
And the worship was great, dude, but it was like, again, you know, looking back on it now, it's like, do we really need, first of all, like, I always find it, like, the whole just structure of a church service, it's so, like, comical how everything is, it doesn't matter what church you go to, if you're a part of the Christian church, it's always the same way. You walk in, like, whoever's not the pastor, but, like, the second in command gives some sort of spiel, and then the worship team starts, and they sing three songs. And then there's like this like piano interlude or like some soft music in the background. And then the dude comes back up and he leads the church in some sort of prayer. And then, you know, the worship team like will finish one song, and then the pastor will come up, he'll do his thing. And then the worship team will come back on stage and do like one or two more songs when everyone leaves, you know, like it's the same thing every single day, or every single Sunday. And I just always thought that was like weird, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that the structure and the you know, it reminds me of you know, a few years back I went through instructor training with Krav Maga Worldwide, just something I was really into doing Krav Maga. I wasn't looking to start a career as an instructor or anything, but I was helping out at the school where I went and things like that. And just learning, going through that instructor program and learning about organizing and leading a class, and I'm sure it's similar to people that, you know, teach Pilates or yoga or any number of things, and just little techniques about interpersonal relationships with people, and then things about, yeah, the beginning, middle, and end of how it's all set up. And then you can go, yeah, wow, a lot of churches like that, or a lot of, you know, in other religious faiths and traditions, like the rituals and the, you know, bow your head this many times and stand up and do this and whatever, and how it's like, man, you really are just whatever's at the heart of it, and whatever you're getting out of it, positively or negatively, the structure of it is really interesting, because it's very, there's some psychological kind of programming that's going on, you know?
Yeah. And if you're not, I guess if you're not locked into it or a part of it, and you're just kind of a spectator, it's really off-putting.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, that's something I noticed just recently going to church. Like I feel, you know, strange as I went to an AA meeting with Sean Feldman one time because mm-hmm. he loves to invite people to his meetings.
Sure.
So you can check it out. I felt more moved there, dude. Like, and there's a lot of the same kind of like methods that they use, you know, like they, like the pledge that they say and stuff has to do with God and all that. But like, I was more moved about that because I felt like it was people that were there and actually struggled with something going up and sharing their story each week or whenever they do the meetings, and everyone supporting that person. And then afterwards, everyone being able to like walk around and communicate and talk and just share like, yeah, this is what I'm going through this week. How are you? And there's people holding each other accountable. I'm like, that's how I feel like church should be.
Yeah.
Like, let's hear from the people inside the building, not just one guy. Let's hear their story and let's lift them up and like support them, you know, and like be there for them, especially the people that are struggling, you know. Like, I feel like that's what I would prefer if I went to a church.
Yeah, there's a lot of real true fellowship there in that, you know, program, as they call it, and the 12-step thing. And, you know, my dad has been in, you know, not to betray his anonymity, but he's been in, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous since the 80s. And so I'm very familiar with that as well. And I have friends that are in recovery, and, you know, Feldman's obviously a mutual friend of ours, and he's a big advocate of that. And yeah, like you said, there's that accountability. And there's also, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, where it's kind of like, all right, you're in the church, you've accepted Jesus, you've joined up in our club. There's not a lot of like, in a lot of instances, and I'm sure, you know, there are some examples that people could go, well, this church does it this way, but by and large, there's not that same thing that you get in like a recovery program where you have a sponsor and you can call them and you're like, hey, I'm, you know, I can't get to work because the transmission's out of my car. Like, what should I do? Where you actually have people that are really involved in the nitty gritty of your life and, you know, helping in a way that, yeah. And I do think it's interesting, you know, one of the things that the 12-step programs, you know, AA and NA and Gamblers Anonymous and the things that are based on that idea, it does have a faith component to it. And it's not religious in the sense that, you know, they're not putting a bunch of rules and limitations and values on you in terms of your personal daily life and ethics and who you love and what you do and what you had for breakfast. But there is that higher power idea in there. And they claim to have a higher success rate than the more secular-based addiction treatments that don't have any kind of higher power in the middle of it. So I think that says something about, you know, there's a lot of throwing the baby out with the bathwater where a lot of us get disgusted, rightly so, by the issues with religion and the oppression and the, you know, whether it's standing by, you know, slavery or patriarchy or all these evils in society. And then we kind of want to throw the whole baby out with the bathwater where, you know, it's like, well, it's all bullshit. And it's like, well, you know, it wasn't bullshit for Martin Luther King. You know, like he had some real faith that seemed to be vibrant and mean something and did something positive. And
yeah,
I think it's as much as we can strip away. And that's something I like to get into with these conversations. You know, it's like just like you were saying, you know, getting that experience as a kid and helping other people and how that went on in your life. Like it's not about which rules you followed or didn't follow or where, what building you showed up to every week. You know, you still got something positive out of it for all the negative, you know. I don't know. I didn't mean to go off on a rant, but that's kind of my thing. And correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, obviously the first exposure in a big way that you got, you know, was YouTube and that Jesus in the Southern Sky song with you and Jesse that, you know, really blew up. And then obviously you had, you know, some other projects and things like that before people got to know you and sleeping. It seemed like there was a connotation to the whole Christian thing that was either attached to you or that was there in some way. How would you explain that now and with the benefit of hindsight and having evolved and developed so much as an artist in your career since then? Was that fair that people were kind of putting that on you, that they thought maybe you were like a Christian singer? Or where was that kind of coming from?
I think honestly, just a lack of life experience, you know? Again, like, that was like a lot of, I could trace that back to like being really young and again going to see like Christian bands, you know, like, one of the bands we worshipped, me and Jesse back then, was Under Oath, you know, and watching them like slap each other for cussing and you know, saying like words on stage and doing all that. And to us, we thought that was like the way to go, you know, cause that's the music we listen to. As I started touring more and going out in the world and seeing the world firsthand and experiencing it and talking with people and having conversations when it came to religion and all the stuff that people had gone through negatively through it, it changed my view. It changed my mind. And again, you know, like also just me getting older and kind of seeing, church not in a, hey, you're thrown into this and this is just kind of expected of you, but as like a willingness to go and check it out. I just kind of like switched gears, you know, I attribute like going to church to helping me, I guess, want to start like doing music and start singing and start writing. But now it's definitely like, it's a part of my past. It's just kind of how I grew up and that's kind of how I see it.
And you know, it's interesting you brought up Under Oath. You know, I had Timmy on the podcast a while back and, you know, we had a great conversation about how his viewpoints and everything have changed. And in a similar sense through life experience and, you know, he has a Muslim family in his neighborhood that him and his family are really close with. And even something as simple as that, changing his outlook and opening and broadening his perspective on other people and other beliefs and, you know, some things that he doesn't identify with anymore in terms of traditional, what would be seen as traditional Christian beliefs. And Spencer's going to be on the podcast here pretty soon. And, know, and his whole journey has obviously been very unique also, and where he's at these days and all that. And I think it's brave not only to wrestle with those questions and those ideas through music and art, but really courageous for a band like Under Oath to be very explicit about who they are and where they're at and not get pigeonholed or tied to any, you know. I mean, can you imagine most people having to abide by the rules they set for themselves when they were like 14 as like, you know, 30 something year old men with families? Like, you know, it's ridiculous.
But
you know?
I will say the times have changed and I think that people are a lot more open now than they used to be.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. I remember being on Warped Tour and that band Four Today would go out and just be like super intense about their preaching on stage. Like they play like two songs and spend the rest of their like set just preaching and just like almost like hate preaching. Like basically just being like, all y'all are sinners. You're going to go to hell unless you change your ways. You know, Maddie, the screamer vocalist, there's many times where, you know, we would like occasionally like see each other and talk and it would always like, I would wait for it. Cause it would be like a normal conversation. Hey, how's your family? Good. How's your family? Good.
Yeah.
Awesome. How's it going out here? Great. And then I'd wait for it. And then sure enough, it would come like, how's your walk and stuff with the Lord? Like, what are you doing with it? You know, because I feel like if you're not in the path of like being a Christian and doing God's work, then I think that you and your band should probably like go home because you're like, you're doing the opposite of what needs to be done.
Wow.
And I'd never sat down with a dude and been like, yo, I'm a full blown Christian. And this is like, I'm out here like spreading the word. Like I never said any of that to him. It's just something that he like assumed upon me. And I remember one day he did that again. Like, he's like, you know, like if you're not doing it for the right reasons, maybe you should go home. I was like, dude, you'd like that, huh? Cause you'd probably sell more merch if my band went home.
Amen.
But he laughed about it and it was fine. And I'm like, dude, like, I don't need to hear that from you, bro. Like, if you want to ask me like how I'm doing, that's cool. But I don't need you to like, I don't need you to save me, you know? So it was, I know that, Buddy from Senseless Phil had some like serious issues with that band too. But it was just, I always thought that was like crazy, you know, like pick your time and place. Like, I don't think that Warped Tour is the, like where kids are just trying to go and enjoy their summer is the time and place. Like maybe at your own show where kids expect you to do that and they want to like hear that from you, then go for it. But like, I always thought, man, like maybe tone it down, you know?
Yeah. Or, you know, provide an opportunity to say, hey, this is what we're about. If you want to come talk talk to us about it. You know, we'll be at our merch table or we're doing a signing or whatever. And versus like turning, Warped Tour into a worship service. It's not necessarily what people signed up for when they came.
Yeah.
And I think, hey, different people feel called to go about things in different ways, but it's mighty presumptuous to, like you said, assume in casual conversation so much about another person's deeply held convictions about, you know, life after death and like all these big, big ideas, you know, like, definitely intrusive, for lack of a better word, to kind of pick at somebody like that who's not inviting it. It'd be different if you were going like, hey, Maddie, let's go get some coffee and, you know, I want to talk to you about your faith and what you believe and what I believe and all that. It's, you know, rather than just like being
which to me, I feel like what would be more ideal is if it was that kind of situation, like talking to me about normal stuff and then, you know, just being like a normal person. And then maybe if that's the case, I would be willing to like ask you questions about it and get to know, you know, more about where you're at with your beliefs and your thoughts. But to just throw it and spring it on somebody has always been something that's kind of turned me off about that, you know, like it's almost like it's different than being Jehovah's Witness or Mormon, you know. It's like, to me, it's the same as, it's like those dudes coming up to your door, you know. And I feel bad for those guys because they have to do it. It's like part of their mission. It's like something they have to do. And you know, I've seen my mom do it so many times, just slam the door in those people's faces and stuff. And I feel bad for them, but it's like, you're asking for it, you know?
And there's some faith traditions even where they do that certain amount of proselytizing, but they've also got this ingrained belief that only X number of people are going to be saved anyway. So it's sort of like, well, I knocked on the door and handed the flyer, did my part. And it has nothing to do with like, hey, when I knocked on your door, I noticed your lawn has turned brown. Are you having trouble? Like, you know, are you behind on your mortgage? Or are you, you know, what's going on? Like, no one's asking questions like that. It's just more like, hey, have you heard the good news about the Lord? I don't know that that's what the good news is. It's also got a similar vibe to me of like, you know, people that are in like pyramid schemes with like vitamins, you know, that are like, hey, so Kellen, how's your day going? How's your kids? How's things with the band? Hey, so dude, these vitamins, man, like blah, 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 blah. And you know, if I give you some and you sell them to like your friend and then blah, 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 blah. Like, it's kind of the same. Like all of a sudden you're just like, wait, what are you selling me all of a sudden? I thought we were just having a conversation. Now I'm being pitched.
Yeah, no kidding.
You're pitching me something, you know, or it's kind of the religious version of like, listen to my demo. You know, it's like, hey, just calm down. Let's get to know each other a little bit first and see if that comes up naturally. Sure, I'd love to check out your band, but don't just, you know, walk up to me while I'm like drinking a soda in a pizza restaurant and shove your CD under my nose. It's a little intrusive. You know, kind of getting into, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, kids and everything. And, you know, you mentioned your 12-year-old going like, yeah, I don't think this is for me. You know, as parents and as people who have had different experiences ourselves, you know, I'm always curious, and, you've got kids that are older than mine. Like, where do you kind of come down on what to say and what to teach and kind of when it comes to this sort of stuff? Because, you know, kids inevitably have questions about like, you know, where do you think we come from and what's the meaning of life and, you know, these big stuff. What's been your kind of experience and handling all that and, you know, what you think is important to impress upon kids, what you think they should figure out for themselves? Like, I don't know. I'm just always interested in asking my friends how they deal with this stuff.
I'm very open-ended with it. Like, if they have questions, then I kind of turn it back around and just be like, well, what do you think? Or what do you believe? You know, like, what do you feel? Like, and all that stuff. And I don't really give, like, a right or wrong answer. You know, my daughter, like, she still likes to do prayers and stuff at night. That's just something she likes to do to calm her down and comfort her and stuff like that. So we pray for, like, her family, and we pray for, like, our cats and the dog and stuff like that. You know, it's, like, it's just very, like, lighthearted. Whereas, like, you know, Rowan and I will have discussions about how silly we think you know, like he'll say, I think it's really silly that this goes on in church and stuff like that. And I go, you know what, dude, I agree with you, man. I think that's kind of silly too. And we'll just have conversations about it. You know, like I don't push anything on my kids, like when it comes to politics or religion or anything like that. I want to leave it up to them to make their own decisions, you know, and just kind of be there to answer questions if I can.
Yeah, I feel like our job as parents is to, you know, instill some core values about, you know, kindness and empathy and honesty and things like that. And then hoping that you just kind of give them the right tools to come to their own conclusions about what's healthy for them and what they believe and who they want to be and how they want to practice it or whatever. Yeah, that's been what I've been doing too. And it's interesting because, you know, my kids have an aunt and uncle who are devout Catholics and have kind of, you know, exposed them to that. And you know, my best friend is a hardcore atheist, and he's not like one of those pushy, preachy people about it. Cause I found that I have some atheist friends who are just as evangelical and preachy, you know, they make four today look like the least preachy thing you've ever heard, but they're preaching atheism right at you, you know? But yeah. And I've taken the stance that, you know, I want my kids to be exposed to all of it and, you know, be around people that have diverse opinions and, you know, are expressive about those opinions and thoughts and let them kind of absorb it and figure it out. Yeah. And I've been similar too, where it's like, I'll answer questions and I'll tell them what I think about this or that. But yeah, I've been careful never to say, you know, yeah, there's a sky wizard in the clouds and he listens to our thoughts. And when he catches you doing this or that, like you're going to get punished. And yeah, I haven't introduced any of that into their lives. And, it almost seems wrong.
We went to like an Easter service with family and stuff like that. And Copeland was like, you know, I think a couple years younger or whatever. And you take your kids down to like the little kid class so that you can go to like big church or whatever and do that. And I just remember her being like crying and clinging to my leg and not wanting to go. And, you know, I thought about it as we left. I'm just like, why? It's scary enough for kids to go to school and like get used to doing that, like to take them to like a place that they've never been before and be like, here, you're going to go in this class with this strange teacher and these other kids that you don't know. I just feel like that's a weird thing about church too. And something that I would never like I asked her, I'm like, do you think you'd ever want to go to church again? And she's like, no, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back there. And that's fine. You know, like I would never like force her to do that. And to have to go somewhere that she doesn't want to go unless she like was stoked and had fun and stuff. And if it's something that she was like, if she were to come up to me, you know, later on and say, hey, is it cool if I go to youth group with my friends? I'm like, sure, go, like have a good time, but never force somebody to go there.
Yeah. Yeah. I never force them to go and never force them not to. That's another good point that you brought up. If she were to be like, hey, these kids at my school do this Bible study. I want to go check it out. I mean, yeah, I also don't want to be the parent that's like, no way, like stay away from that. Like it's oppressive and evil and whatever, you know? Yeah, no, it's like, yeah, check things out and count and measure and add it all up and see what you think, you know, and I'll be here to tell you what I think when you know, cause I've got some more experience. Yeah, that's cool. I wish that was the attitude that obviously more parents and, you know, I think people more and younger generations, I think it's expanding and people are kind of raising their kids the way that we're talking about versus indoctrinating them with this or that. But it's tricky because by the same time, you don't want to be so loosey-goosey and hippy-dippy with everything that it's just like, oh, whatever, man, whatever you feel, you know, like, and then your kids are like, oh, I feel like stealing this candy bar, why not, you know? There's
kind of,
there's that balance, you know?
You teach your kids, like, right and wrong and stuff. You know, me and my wife are very transparent on, like, things that we did as a kid so that they don't feel like we don't understand. Like, my 12-year-old tries to pull the wool over my eyes all the time. I'm like, dude, I was 12. I did the same thing you do. I'm not stupid. I know you think I'm stupid. I'm not. Like, here's an example of what I did, and we'll laugh about it. And, you know, and then I feel like they understand it that way. But it's like, I'm not putting myself above them or making myself seem like I know it all, because I don't know it all. And I think that it's important for them to make some decisions on their own and figure it out.
Now, I think it's also interesting, and this is something I, you know, struggle with, and I'm still kind of, not necessarily struggle in a, because that almost has a negative connotation, like it's difficult. It's more just that it's a continuing challenge, but an exciting challenge. You know, I want my kids to grow up with reason and science and, you know, fact-based ideas. But by the same turn, you know, just because I don't want to give them this, like, you know, I don't want my kids thinking that the Earth is 5,000 years old and, you know, any of this stuff that's just like clearly superstitious nonsense. At the same time, I don't want to rob them of, you know, magic and mystery, and any more than I want to rob myself of magic and mystery, and, you know,
right.
whether you find that in music and art, and I'm sure, you know, you as a performer, especially an emotional and passionate performer that puts so much of yourself into your songs, you know, I'm sure you felt moments on stage or in the studio or even just, you know, doing something like the pop-up shows that you just did with Nick, like, I'm sure you feel moments of, like, transcendental, like, you know, something bigger is going on. Like there's more to life than just, you know, flesh and bone and that sort of thing. Where do you kind of fall on that, that balance and that, you know, do you feel like there is some kind of magic or some kind of supernatural thing that's beyond, even if it's not, you know, these like literal myths that we're taught?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I think that some things are just out of our control, you know? It's the unknown. I think really that is the magic. Just the unknown about what could happen to you, like physically in your life, emotionally, financially, like life is just, it's always an up and down roller coaster and you never know really what's going to happen. I think that's kind of the beauty and the magic in it, is you learn your lessons and you figure yourself out. I think you are born and you learn some things from your parents and you go off on your own, and through trial and error, you discover who you are, you know, and you have your sense of self and being and all that stuff, through just experiencing life. And I think that there are scientific explanations for a lot of things. You know, we can look at those and we can go, okay, cool, that makes sense. But there's also no explanation for a lot of things, and we can't really make sense of it. So we have to just kind of trust that, you know, things will work out the way they're supposed to. I guess that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, there are so many things that we take for granted now as facts, like, you know, the existence of germs or radio waves or, you know, things that once upon a time nobody knew about or understood, and yet they were there, you know. And I think that some of these bigger kind of spiritual ideas, I think there's still so much that's unknown. And the idea that anybody has a handle on it one way or the other definitively to say this is what it means or this is what's happening or this is definitely not happening is, you know, the most like the height of arrogance, you know. I to me,
right,
as I've gotten older, you know, and I consider myself a believer and someone of faith, but I found that the real beauty and mystery and magic and all that, like, it is in the mystery, it is in the unknowing and the uncertainty and the constant, like, skepticism and doubt and questioning and taking in all this information. And that's been, you know, one of my big kind of selfish motivations for doing this podcast, is I just love hearing from and learning from other people and their experience. And I tend to relate with creative people that are, you know, musicians and writers and things like that. So it's all fun. This to me can be like a form of fellowship and a form of church that's a lot more instructive than sitting in the pew listening to someone
tell you the same story. I found just, you know, talking with my band and other bands and kids that come out to shows and just asking them and conversating with them and communicating that way has been more influential in my life than going to church ever would be or will be. I have conversations with my friends that still go to church, and they ask me, like, where am I at with God and where am I at with this and that? And it's like, I can tell them how I feel, dude. And like, there's no judgment from them, which is cool. And it's funny because, like, even like some of my closest friends that were like all about the church and going to the church all the time. You know, I just had a recent conversation with one of my friends, and he's like, I don't know where God is in my life. I feel like all this really shitty stuff is happening to me, and I pray all the time, and I do all this and that, and nothing seems to be changing in a positive way for me. You know, and I can explain to him, like, you know, as shitty as this might sound, like, you know, I don't think that if God is real, I don't think he's the type of God that's just going to bail you out when things are easy or hard. I mean, I think he's the one that, I think that he's going to let you go through those challenges and those hard times to become a better version of yourself, you know? So I'm like, just look at it as any sort of opportunity that comes from it is going to make you stronger and a better person, and see it as that. And, you know, they took that and thought it was helpful, you know? So just being able to have those conversations on a normal level, again, I think is what church should be, and not just some guy that's up there that pretends to know more than you just because you studied doctrine and all this. I think it's about life experience. You know, like, I would prefer to hear from somebody that had made mistakes in their life and had gone through hard times and had come out of it and said, like, I'm a better person because of finding God. And, you know, like, this is what I've learned through my mistakes. Like, I feel like I learned better from that than just some guy that grew up going to church and his dad was a pastor, and so it just turned out that he was going to be one and all that.
Yeah, which I think speaks volumes to why you felt something resonate with you in the AA meeting, even though you weren't there as an alcoholic seeking treatment. You were just, you know, there with a friend checking it out, because you heard those transformative stories from people that felt that they, you know, what's that cliche, religion is for people who are scared to go to hell, spirituality is for people who've been there. You know, I think that's right. That's the AA thing in a nutshell, like, you know, hearing from people that have put it into practice. Because, yeah, I think when we're sold this idea of a God as a genie, like this ultimate wish fulfiller, where we're just, you know, petitioning God all day to make our dreams come true and, you know, ask for all this intervention. It seems like that idea often fails people, you know, like,
yeah,
it doesn't seem like that's how it works.
My grandma, who's very Christian, and has been my whole life, will pray for like front row parking at the store.
Right.
That's not a joke. She'll be like, please God, give me a good parking spot. I'm like, oh God, grandma.
I mean, you know, think about all the people that are praying for their team to win the Super Bowl. Like, well, somebody's prayers didn't get answered. You know, if you're gonna say I prayed to God that we would win and we did, well, does that mean the other side wasn't praying?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and hey, that's not to say that there isn't some miraculous, you know, I don't want to take away from people's experience that feel that they've seen answered prayer, and, you know, my own experience of things that I can't explain or whatever, but I think overall this idea of yeah, God the genie and the wish fulfiller, it seems too small, you know, if we're gonna believe in some kind of in a God that's the creator of the universe. Like, is God gonna be like really sitting around, you know, concerning himself specifically with, you know, God, I'm going to get my haircut today. I'm really praying that the barber doesn't fuck it up. Like, I don't know. I don't think that's what God's doing all day. Like,
yeah, he's up in these spaces.
Right.
Exactly. And it's all random, dude.
Yeah, and somebody's cancer remission because you're like, okay, telling that other family they aren't from cancer because they didn't pray hard enough or they didn't pray in the right way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that if it's a real thing, then, you know, again, learning from experiences in life, good or bad, is the purpose, you know. Otherwise, we can get into the whole, like, why are we here thing, and it would take forever. But if God was real, like, why hasn't he come back yet? Like, there's obviously some lessons that still need to be learned on Earth from everyone. So,
well, this is a pretty good place to wrap up. I would say, then, you know, that question that some of your Christian friends and things like that ask you and all that sort of thing. Where do you kind of come down on that nowadays? Do you feel that there's a higher power or God or something that to kind of go to you for guidance, or, you know, Is it more of a, I mean, I don't know. Where do you kind of land on that these days?
I think it's the energy we put out into the universe, really. I think, like, you know, when I'm on tour, I'll always pray for my family and stuff like that before I go to bed, just to kind of put that positivity out there and say, like, I'm thinking about you, and, you know, I'm hoping that everyone is going to be okay, and that I'm going to be okay, and I'm going to make it home, and this and that. But it's like a hating way for me to feel more at ease, I guess. And, you know, when things are hard or things are tough for me in my life, I don't blame anybody or anything for that. I just assume that it's just a part of life, and it is something that we're going to have to go through. I don't think there's anything that I did to deserve it, or, you know, I don't think that it's me being challenged by anybody. I just think that it is life, you know, like life wouldn't be life without good and bad times. So I just try to learn what I can from the bad times and enjoy the good times as much as possible.
Yeah, we get sold this idea by religions and by self-help and, you know, by a lot of things that we're supposed to be happy, we're supposed to be positive, we're supposed to feel good, we're supposed to be fit and beautiful, these different things. And what inevitably happens is we crash and burn so hard when we're confronted with the first obstacle or the first challenge, because we're constantly being told that we should be positive and be happy. And it's like, you know, there's something fundamentally unhealthy about not recognizing when you're unhappy or when you're bored,
right?
Or when you're sad, and just kind of, you know, existing in that moment as intently and as purposefully as you exist in a moment of joy. You know, I think that's a big part of what's missing, and with this emphasis on, you know, everybody's looking for the answer. Like, what's the thing that's going to make me be happy all the time? And it's like, nothing. I hope that's never, you know.
Right, exactly.
So, well, awesome, dude. Well, thanks so much for making the time. Since I started it, I've been wanting to get you on because I figured you'd have a unique take on all this stuff, and I was not wrong.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. It's always good talking with you.
Likewise. Yeah, it's been too long.
Cool. Thanks, Ryan. It's always good talking to you, man. I appreciate it.
Likewise, brother. Take care of yourself, and I'll talk to you soon. You can keep up with Kellen on Twitter and Instagram and follow all of his band's happenings on social media as well. Find No Prize From God on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and check out our blog on Patheos, where we take deep dives into many of the subjects that come up in the podcast. Subscribe and check out past episodes with Kellen Quinn collaborator Maddie Mullins of Memphis Mayfire, Jesse Leach from Killswitch Engage, Ryan Clark of Demon Hunter, Satir Wongraven from Satyricon, Modern Tarot author Michelle T, and many more great guests. And please, if you'd be so kind, leave us a 5-star review and a nice rating in Apple Podcasts. And while you're in there, if you're a Metallica fan, check out our sister show, Speak and Destroy, a podcast about all things Metallica, featuring guests from bands like Avenged Sevenfold, Pantera, Megadeth, Testament, Hailstorm, and many, many more. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Downey and on Instagram at SuperheroHQ. And as always, you guys have been great, and I've been Ryan J. Downey.